This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Obviously, with the story coming out of Ballarat these last week or so, the story of missing mum, Samantha Murphy, we are all concerned, we're watching it closely, and it has brought this whole area of missing person to top of mind. And someone who knows this space very well, and in fact has made it a really resourceful space and a space of hope, is our next guest, Lauren O'Keefe, who's founder of the MIST Foundation, mist.org.au, and following the disappearance of her own brother back in 2011. Lauren, welcome.
Thanks, David.
It's a triggering event, this sort of story coming out of Ballarat. How are you coping?
It is triggering, and I appreciate you recognising that. I think any family that's been touched by missingness will have felt, really kind of re-traumatised by this experience and watching it all unfold in the news. It is something that happens, 150 times a day in Australia. People do go missing, but there are certain cases for various reasons that do tend to capture the attention more than others, and Samantha Murphy's is certainly one of those.
And for someone who is missing that loved person, going through that torment, what are the sort of thoughts that a person may grapple with?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's such a surreal experience that you are completely overwhelmed by, every possible and impossible imagining of, an accident to maybe it's amnesia, maybe she was abducted and everything in between. So it's completely paralyzing. And the reference point really, at least in my experience and the families that I support, has been that we look to what happens in the movies. You know, we see these things unfold in TV shows and we therefore expect, everyone to drop everything. The police will deploy every resource and ultimately, they're supposed to come home safe and well quickly. And then when that doesn't happen, like it does in the TV shows, it is particularly devastating.
I know that we were chatting last year about this whole area of ambiguous loss, and it's something that I think it's really important for us to try and understand and try and even begin to work out what it does to our psyche. How can we live with this notion of living in hope but living in dread at the same time?
It is really complex because humans are sort of programmed to expect, endings to stories and answers to questions, especially in this day and age. And so when you have an ambiguous loss, which is a loss that's unclear and that is sort of, this unending not knowing, it does really complicate and delay a grieving process. So it is really challenging because we're used to talking about conventional loss, things like bereavement, where typically over time it does tend to get easier to cope with. An ambiguous loss is different because of its continual nature. So it is really important that people that are impacted by this very unique type of grief realise that there are resources out there and people who can offer specialised support.
Those resources, there are many to be found at mist.org.au. And if this conversation is causing you any distress, that is the website to check, but also to Lifeline 13 11 14. David Astor with you on ABC Evenings. And I'm chatting to Lauren O'Keefe, the founder of the MIST Foundation, at that website. And we are talking about missing persons and the number of missing persons in Australia. I'm really still trying to fathom that figure you gave us earlier. 150 disappearances a day, you said, Lauren.
Yeah, that's the case. It is alarming. I mean, this, especially given that it's we've seen an over 35% increase just in the past 4 years. But of course, naturally and thankfully, the overwhelming majority of those 150 a day are found safe and well quickly. It's around, 95% that are resolved within a week. Only around 2 to 5% will go on to become long-term missing, which is in Australia at least considered beyond 3 months. And of that 150 a day, typically it's around the 1 to 2% that are suspicious or criminal in nature. The overwhelming majority, 85% of cases, pertain to mental health issues.
Well, that's one side of the missing persons that people may not understand. What are some misconceptions, some myths that are well worth dismantling as well?
I think there are misconceptions in terms of both the issue and the types of people that go missing. In terms of the issue, I think that we assume missing persons is something that police deal with wholly, you know, that and understandably, you know, they're the first port of call. That's who you report a missing loved one to. But the police's primary function is to solve crime and to, you know, keep the public safe. It's not a crime to go missing. And again, you know, given the fact that such a small fraction of cases are actually suspicious, we do really need to see this issue as a community issue because it is. You know, it can't all be lumped on police. They simply do not have the resources to tackle every single angle of missing persons. It's so broad. Then in terms of the types of people that go missing, you know, this can happen to anyone. It's really important to remember that there are so many reasons why people disappear, and often we only really know the reason once they're found. And even then, it might be, you know, 100% clear. And I think that there are some really problematic mentalities around certain cohorts, like teenagers, for example, you know, that this idea that teenagers just run away over trivial matters when it almost always indicates that there are genuine problems that they need help with. And similarly for adults, you know, I think there's this idea that men in particular, but adults generally might just be, you know, wanting some space or to go and start a new life. But the same applies. You know, no one in a sound state of mind with a perfectly functional, happy life just sort of ups and leaves without telling anyone. So it is important for us to recognize that, you know, regardless of the circumstances, the demography or the geography, every missing person deserves to be looked for.
When police acknowledge that their resources are limited, which of course is an ongoing reality, when a case is redefined as being a missing persons case, what does that mean in terms of police resources and police focus?
Well, I can't speak from a police perspective, but I know from personal experience that resource-wise, I think a lot of the time people don't actually consider the financial impact on families themselves because, you know, you can't not be working. If this does go on to become a long-term case, you know, families naturally have to go back to their jobs, and the resources of the public that may have been ample to begin with, like the response we've seen in Ballarat has been extraordinary, but if it carries on, those resources do tend to wane, as does the police, you know, police resources, of course, but the media interest, the public interest and compassion generally. So it is really tough for families to start seeing the change in resources deployed to finding their loved one.
So, how is we as a community, both a broad one here beyond Ballarat or within Ballarat, how can we be of help to this case or to any case that we are connected with by personal means or even through media attention? How can we best support this case and this whole issue generally?
There are lots of ways. I think for starters, as it's been mentioned in the media this week, don't treat a disappearance as entertainment. Don't speculate, especially publicly, because speculation really does untold damage to families that are already dealing with significant trauma. You know, these news stories are real tragedies, and any sort of exploitation of desperate and vulnerable people is unconscionable. And I see it all the time, and it boils my blood. So, to genuinely help people that are impacted by this, I think people should, I would encourage all of your listeners to check out our missing persons guide. It's got a lot of practical guidance for people who are involved closely with a search. We've got, you know, ideas like helping with practical tasks. Families, you know, they're not in any fit state to be cooking meals for themselves or doing their laundry or doing their life admin. So if you're in a position to help someone who is directly affected, you know, think about those practical ways you can help. And then in terms of just general education, learn about ambiguous loss. We have a great podcast. It's called What's Missing, where we sort of delve into the issues behind the scenes, because a lot of the time, you know, missing persons as a topic is, you know, reduced to some news headlines, and we families don't get an opportunity to talk about what it's actually like to live with not knowing where a loved one is. We also did a really great episode of You Can't Ask That with the ABC a year or so ago. think it's season six. So, you know, watch that on iView. We've also got that masterclass, the Ambiguous Loss Masterclass, that anyone can watch. It's free. It's about 45 minutes. And we've got an internationally renowned missing persons expert, Associate Professor Sarah Wayland, that goes through her 20 years of expertise on the topic of missing persons and ambiguous loss. So these are all really simple ways to help families and the cause more broadly. And of course, lastly, as a charity, you can always make a tax deductible donation to the MIST Foundation, because, you know, I support about 80 families all around Australia who have very different sets of circumstances, very different lengths of time that their loved ones have been missing, and the challenges are vast.
You call them small suggestions, small differences, but they are absolutely immeasurably important, compassionate and practical. And if you'd like to know more about these sorts of resources available, about these classes, about how we as a community trying to help those who are living with this ambiguous loss, whatever the situation or whatever the circumstances, head to the MIST Foundation. It's MISSED, of course, the MIST Foundation, mist.org.au, to find those resources available. And Lauren O'Keefe, who's the founder of that website and that wonderful resource hub, I really appreciate your time as always, and thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks, David.